You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Morning to you. We're in the second half of January in 2020 already. Not sure where January went, but it's half gone. By the time we get through the weekend, we'll be into the 20s. Yeah, how about that? And then into February, which means spring training is going to start. Yeah, baseball. But not yet. All right, not yet, not yet. Last night, yesterday was my recovery day, right? So I didn't do I have to work, and so that's why I kind of wrapped things up in the early afternoon. Actually, in the middle of the afternoon, I waited for Colleen, hung out with Colleen for a little bit, and then. Colleen went to a soccer game and I think a basketball game after that. They were playing their big rival, the Battle of the Bell, as it's known here in Costa Mesa. Anyhow, I watched Ken and Betty Rogers documentary, Bravo, Common Men, Uncommon Valor, about Bravo Company, 1st Battalion, 26 Marines in Vietnam. Specifically at Quezon. And you know, it's kind of interesting because I think things that are good, as the years go by, they impact you in different ways.
You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Oh, that's why that's happening. Repeat. One song. Anyway, okay, I fixed that. So I watched it, and you know, it's again, I have the same experience with Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. I watch these things for this reason, or listen to these things for this reason, over and over and over again. And because they, to me, they say different things to you as your life experience changes. And so I want to play a little bit of, and it's the end of Bravo. And it's where they sit around and talk about their life when they came back home. And so I want you to listen to that. It's pretty interesting. And I don't know why it struck me. It strikes me now different as I as I see things that fit into the post-traumatic winning presentation. I will tell you, the post-traumatic winning presentation is so dense now, it's crazy. I talk really fast, and that thing is 3 hours long. Yeah. And so, and then when people say, well, could you reduce it to 90 minutes? I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I can, and I do. I wish I could get it to 2 hours. But the problem with that is if you give a break, right, of 10 minutes and that somebody introduces it, that's 10 minutes. And then somebody, that same person closes it. Let's just say that's 10 minutes. They speak at the end. So they're speaking for 20. The break is 10. So if it's 2 hours, it's really 90 minutes. And if it's 90 minutes, it's really an hour. So yeah, I struggle with its length, but I want to play this for you because it kind of resonated with me last night, and I'll stop and comment as I always do. But before I do that, you know, one of my favorite people on the news is a business guy on Fox. His name's Charles Payne. Now Charles is a big dude. He's a black guy. He's a big dude. He's not your prototypical, like, TV talking head, right? He's not, like, you know, one of the beautiful people that happens to, you know, be able to, you know, carry a sentence and can read a teleprompter. He's not that. So I want to play something here. I was watching him this morning, and he's talking about the deal in China, and I want to share it with you. Yeah, so here's Charles Payne talking about the deal in China, and he's also talking about Elizabeth Warren's idea. He kind of clicks off safe about forgiving everybody's student debt, which is how she intends to buy votes, evidently. So anyway, here's Charles Payne, one of my favorite guys in the news, you know, because, you know, he speaks with common sense. You know, he's a business guy, so here he is.
Together we are writing the...
This is actually the President of the United States yesterday.
...future of economic justice and security for American workers, farmers, and families.
So President Trump telling the first phase of his...
This is Bill Wimmer here. He's evidently going to change roles.
Historic trade deal between the U.S. and China, phase one, we call it.
And then Charles Payne shows up.
Charles Payne breaks down the numbers, reading deep we are. Hello, sir.
Hello. It's an amazing feat. I mean, bottom line, I mean, no one really has talked about how amazing this feat is because all of the experts 2 years ago said it wouldn't work, that a trade war would crash our economy. How many guests came on your show 2 years ago and uttered the phrase Smoot-Hawley? You know, I mean, let's be honest. No one thought it would work. Everyone thought it would be economic a catastrophe. Instead, we have China at the table. You can quibble over this deal. You can
quibble
over phase two.
Of it. People are saying, you know, some who want to criticize the president for touting this as a big win want to say, well, it's not all it's cracked up to be. To that,
I think it's a gargantuan win. It's a win. You know, it's a win because no matter what we got would have been a win. Mm. The path that we were on was ridiculous. We were giving away everything. We were giving away our preeminence in the world for cheap plastic stuff, for subsidized materials. We were giving that away as a nation.
But how do we know China's going to follow through on the...
We don't know. That's why the president, you know, has measures to go. But they have put in things that will allow us to gauge it. You know, they have put in mechanisms that will allow us to judge this. And I think, listen, Lighthizer, who's the guy who really masterminded this whole thing, was involved with Ronald Reagan when he went after Japan for something very similar, but not on a monumental scale.
On the left side of the screen.
Right there.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. Mnuchin brilliant. Driven by President Trump, you know, who really pushed them. It's just a remarkable thing.
The point here at Lighthizer, big standing ovation yesterday as we watched it in the White House. The president was saying that we've had deals with Canada and Japan and China and Japan, but never a deal with China. And now you have, for the first time, a structure that is in place.
We had arrangements.
Do you believe that is accurate?
I believe we had it. We've had arrangements with them. We've asked them to stop things. We had the World Trade Organization, but World Trade Organization has no authority to enforce its rulings. So it's like, you know, if they can find China guilty over and over and over and over and over again, which, by the way, they did. And so proponents are saying, well, we won in the World Trade Organization. If China doesn't curb or change its approach, we won zero. It's been a joke. It's been an unmitigated joke. Now, here's the beautiful thing. Mm. Those folks who say, well, President Trump should wait for the rest of the world. Let's rally our allies. I mean, they would have never have come to the table. But what did they do this week? The European Union and Japan joined with the United States, and they're formally going to the World Trade Organization and saying, let's change the rules on subsidizing industrial products so that you can no longer put entire industries like steel out of business. Because it wasn't just our steel mills, the European steel mills, mm-hmm. the Japanese steel mills.
All right, one last question before we move on to Elizabeth Warren and college, the market.
Think about that. Pretty amazing, right? That, you know, the major industrial nations around the world will take action jointly against China. That's amazing stuff, because heretofore, nobody wanted to go down that road because China would pinch you off and you would suffer economically, which means you would suffer politically, which means that's not a good course of action. So the only way, as we talked about on the show before, to do it is in concert.
It's all-time highs in the wake of this trade deal. Does that rally continue? It is record-breaking.
Absolutely, it continues, because what you're looking at right now is 100% not the trade deal. It's this economy. Let me tell you the corporate earnings that came out this week that killed it. J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, yesterday United Healthcare, the third most powerful stock in the Dow. Delta Airlines, Taiwan Semiconductor, all the semiconductors are up. What about economic data? This morning, retail sales number, watch GDP estimates go higher. Mortgage applications to buy homes in this country, up 39%. Traffic is at the...
Did you hear that? Mortgage applications up 39%. Now, to me, that's like the health index of the middle class, right? That's huge.
Highest level.
All right, so you say it's going to continue. I just want to get in this tweet.
Jobless claims at the best level since 1969.
Before we go, student loan crisis. Elizabeth Warren wants to forgive student debt. She says we can.
Okay, now listen to this. This is awesome. As he goes off on Elizabeth Warren.
Do this, bypass Congress. Your thoughts?
She is tripping. I mean, imagine this. I'm not, honestly, this is ridiculous. You're going to forgive student loans to people making $250,000 a year? Let me tell you what people make in this country. At the end of 2017, if you work less than college, if you had less than a college degree, your average income was $520. High school, $712. If you had a doctoral, almost $2,000 a week. These are weekly salaries. So someone making $700 a week is going to pay off the debt, the student debt of someone who's making $2,000 a week? Is she in bizarro world?
There he goes.
I mean, if you go to college, great. You're great. You're probably doing better than the person who didn't. Pay your college loans.
She said
you took it out.
This day one, if elected.
I know. Well, that's why she's not going to get elected. It's nuts. You know what's great for her college buddies in these college towns that she hangs out at? It's not great for the average American worker.
See you at 2:00.
All right.
Yeah, he doesn't look like an economist. He's a big dude, right? And so, I'm a fan of that guy. Plain spoken economics, very, very well grounded, not devoted to either party, devoted to numbers, devoted to history and whatnot. So anyway, Charles Payne, he's a business analyst. And as I said, I'm a pretty big fan of that dude's. Should I start the show and then do that, do this? How do I want to do it? Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenney going to join us today. We'll kind of go around the track, get their thoughts on, what happens next with Iran. I've been reading. I read a fair amount yesterday, caught up on some stuff and read about Iran. And Iran, if you read about the protests that evolved inside the country, right, it started as mourning, and then as you'll hear Tim Lynch say later today, they started ripping down the posters of Soleimani and started chanting bad things about him and bad things about the government. And so, as has happened previous, these protests start as one thing and then they evolve to something else. So it's pretty interesting to watch, I think, to watch this thing evolve in Iran. And with the question, what's next? Will the Iranians, will they retaliate at some way, in some way, shape, or form? Will they do it by proxy? And when they do, you know, what will be the American response? And so again, we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about something we talked about with Grant Newsham, and that is the election in Taiwan and the implications of that. As I think America's standing, as Grant has said often on the program, Americans standing up on their hind legs relative to China for once has well, certainly you just saw a galvanizing effect when you have, you know, all the industrial nations, Western European, Japan, going to the World Trade Organization to say, we've got to prohibit this. You know, but again, you heard Charles Payne say, without any enforcement mechanism, like what? And so we'll see where that goes. I'll be curious about that. But you'll also, if you paid attention to the South China Sea, you've also seen the Philippines, Vietnam, and Malaysia. You know, in the news the last couple of weeks, using the United Nations, who does have enforcement, you know, mechanisms to go after the Chinese. And I think a lot of it has to do with American leadership in terms of pushing back economically on their predatory practices. So anyway, so I think it's so you'll hear us talk about that kind of stuff in the next hour. Now, let me start the show. So. The United States Marine Corps ban makes Thursday official. Good morning to you. This is dedicated to Ken Rogers today. Yeah. You know, when you do great work, it doesn't go away, right? And again, I watch Bravo. I don't know how many times I've watched the documentary, but it's just awesome. Awesome piece of work. And for those of you that have never seen it, if you're on Amazon Prime, you can, it's free with Amazon Prime. For those of you who don't have Amazon Prime, it's called Bravo! ! Common Man, Uncommon Valor, and then type in Marines and Quezon. Quezanh. Type that in and it will pop right up. And it's an awesome documentary. And it documents where these guys came from. So young there. You know, you had guys 17, you know, joining the Marine Corps, dropping out of high school, joining the Marine Corps, and off to do their patriotic duty as their fathers and grandfathers and uncles had, and aunts and whatnot. And then they're at Quezon. And then obviously it chronicles their time at Quezon. And then the little clip I'll play with you is, you know, the last few minutes where they talk about coming home. And I mean, and again, I'm always mindful in my life how well I've been treated by the American public. And and we're treated that way because Vietnam, the country grew up on Vietnam veterans. And you hear the stories that they'll tell here in a couple minutes. It makes you sad to listen to it. And let alone to think somebody lived this. And as difficult as, you know, kind of coming to grips with what you just went through is and putting your life back together and, you know, and doing the things that everybody wants to do, I think, which is, you know, find somebody, you know, to make a life with, to have a family and to do that. That's difficult enough under normal circumstances. And then, you know, when you can't even talk about the things that you went through because people will shit on you, that's a sobering thought, you know, that you would be, you know, I always say that, that the facing movement to the door of destructive behavior is isolation. And if you don't isolate yourself, you can get through anything. What happens if the isolation that you've gone into is just a matter of necessity? Because if you are honest and if you are do try to open up, you're abused. You're called a baby killer, right? And you're called an idiot and shit like that. You know, just a brutal, brutal circumstance. So anyway, dedicated to Ken and Betty Rogers. Here on a Thursday morning. Good morning to you.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You gotta win.
Alright, we will check the weather. Currently, it is cloudy and 55 at Quantico, so it warmed up a bunch in the District of Columbia, which is probably a good thing. Because they don't take bad weather very well. It's cloudy and 69. Wait. Hold on. I think these temperatures are wrong. My spidey sense tells me. They're not, though. Cloudy in 69 degrees in North Carolina. Sunny at 43 in 29 Palms. Cloudy, foggy, and 48 at Camp Pendleton. Camp Smith in Hawaii, where Massachusetts Chris is. Yeah. Dark, cloudy, and 68 in Hawaii. Okinawa, further west, clear, dark at 67, so they've got a little cooler. In Afghanistan, it's cold. Dark, cloudy, and 39 in Iraq. Dark, cloudy, and 52. At the home of All Marine Radio, it is 52 degrees under hazy skies. Kind of in the morning in California, it's not hazy. Might be a little bit foggy. I think weather people just do this shit, man. The wind chill sits at 49. Yeah. Hey, let me tell you, man, it's cold up here. I talked to the chef yesterday. Yeah, they're like 20 below up there for the high. Like, and they're a little bit south and east of Bev in Saskatchewan. So, yeah. Here in California, looking for a high of 61 today, 63 tomorrow, and on Saturday, all the way up to 72. So, fart about that. Shithole weather. From East Grand Forks, Minnesota. Current conditions, 25 degrees below zero. Feels like 28 because there is no wind. Winds are at 5 miles an hour out of the west. Today's forecast, a high of 9 degrees below zero. Winds at 7, gusting to 13 from the south-southwest. The low overnight, 14 degrees below zero. Skies should be clear so you can see your breath freeze. Yeah, not just fog up, freeze. Wind chill advisory in effect till 3 p.m. Wind chills could be as low as 40 degrees below zero. Winter storm watch in effect on Friday through Saturday. 2 to 6 inches of snow possible. Winds gusting to 45 miles an hour. Blizzard conditions are possible with this storm. Stay tuned. Ugh. From Ruth Ann in East Grand Forks, Minnesota. And my favorite part, Ruth Ann sent a couple of pictures. And there's a picture. It looks like I have the window of a business in East Grand Forks looking at the outdoor hockey rink across the street, if I'm not mistaken. And then there's the picture of a cold, snowy drive home. I can see how, I can feel how cold it is through the picture. Maybe not. From Hawaii, Chris. Aloha. Shithole weather continues its pivot to the Pacific. Position, Wailea, Maui, Hawaii. This is Hohopiki Beach, North Shore in Maui. It's a world-class windsurfing location. In recent years, green sea turtles come up on the eastern edge of the beach to rest in the afternoon. Not a bad gig. Afternoon naps on the beach for them. Current conditions, dark, 65 degrees with a high of 82 today. Mostly cloudy, possible showers in the afternoon, right? That's how it is in Hawaii. Northeast winds at 5 to 15 miles an hour, turning light and variable in the afternoon. Chris, normally broadcasting from Massachusetts, out. And then there's a picture of the beach where I think the sea turtles are. And then he sent me a video. And that I'm looking to see if I can download. All right, from First Sergeant in North Carolina. Hickory, North Carolina, shithole weather update. 59 with a mix of clouds and sun. Winds out of the northwest at 15 to 25 miles an hour and a low overnight of 31. Had an outpatient procedure this morning, so this is my view of the day, which is a view of a movie with Brad Pitt in it as the... that's in his bedroom. So he's doing outpatient shit, which is kind of what he just said. He also took Montana Man to task last night. He said that he thought Montana man yesterday not accepting responsibility for the Red Sox cheating and parsing his words about it was conduct unbecoming of an officer. So I relayed that to Montana man and Napa man last night, and Montana man, as you might expect, took exception with it, to it. And so, which meant we had to rub it in even more. And so he started, you know, parsing, you know, well, you know, the report about the Red Sox isn't out, so how can I apologize for it? To which I responded, oh, easy, Chief Gallagher, okay? And let me tell you how that went over, like a lead balloon, okay? So the Napa man's like evolving as a human being because he used to always diffuse situations and bring down the thermostat. Napa man's somehow like gone through a metamorphosis. Now Napa man's throwing fuel on the fire. Right? Yeah. He's inciting Montana man to more and more reckless destructive behavior. And so I then have to get involved to abuse Montana man to get him back in the box, which does not always work, but it doesn't matter because I enjoy abusing them. All right, I want to play for you something I watched last night, and I found it meaningful, and in particular in on the backside of doing post-traumatic winning for, you know, for the better part of 9 days, actually 4 9 days with a couple of coast-to-coast trips thrown in there, you know, so I don't know, it was about a dozen days moving around the country. But, again, if you haven't watched Bravo, I think you should, right? And I had this whole fucking thing set up, and where did it go? Hold on, see if it plays. Well, of course not, it doesn't play. Uh-oh. All right, hold on.
There's not a day that goes by that I don't think about Kason, that I don't think about some aspect of my time there.
Okay, now, this is at the end of the movie. And they're talking, they're Ken and Betty are filming, obviously. And these are the Marines from that appear in the documentary, just talking about their life once they left Quezon.
And why me? Why did I survive and not Ted Britt or Smitty or some of the other guys that, you know, were the heroes?
I was always proud to be a Marine and extremely proud of the uniform that I wore and the ribbons that I earned. I was told, we were ordered, it was highly advisable that we not wear our uniforms on the bus to the airport, keep the windows up on the bus because of the people that protested it. And the trouble or whatever that would arise from it. You know, then I just did it, and I just changed into my civilian clothes and got on the bus and got on the plane and went home and lived my life.
When I flew...
You know, think about this. Contrast that with most of the time coming and going from... Well, every time... Coming and going from Camp Pendleton, we would fly in and out of March Air Force Base. So there was nobody there, right? I think there might have been a fire truck that they might have shot water out of when we landed. But that was about it. It was just us. We came home to us and our, you know, families would be at Camp Pendleton, right? But when I came home on leave in 2010, landed in Dallas, and, you know, a long flight, And you're trying to make your connections because you don't want to burn up your leaves sitting in airports. And then, you know, you're walking through a concourse that only the military used, right? And so the way you came from that terminal, where the gates where we landed, into the main concourse, was it was this elevated, you know, hallway in glass. And people down below could see us, right? And they would wave and they would clap. And, you know, I mean, I don't know that everybody got emotional, but most of us did. Because we'd never, you know, I'd never been, you know, nobody had ever treated me like that. And then you came down this, I think it was an escalator, and there was USO people, and there was this big crowd, and there's people standing around. And you're just, and you're coming back from the war. And they're standing there clapping for you. And, you know, it's the warm embrace for the country that you fought for. And, you know, I remember, you know, I remember just how awesome that was. And I remember flying to Orange County, and I can't remember, I don't know if I was going back or I don't know what the hell, but I was, I'd grabbed something to eat at McDonald's. I was leaning against the wall after I'd eaten it, and I was reading a book, and the a woman came up to me, and she said, "Are you coming or going?" And I said, "Well, I'm on leave. I'm going home right now." She said, "Can I give you a hug?" And I said, "Sure." You know, she just looked at me and she said, "God bless you. Thank you." And I said, "Thank you." But it's the warm embrace of your country, right? And these guys didn't get that. These guys didn't get that. And they weren't, you know, a 45-year-old, you know, major. They were 20 years old, 19 years old when they came back from Quezon. So, and you can hear it in their voices.
Landed at El Toro, and they had about a 20 or 30 minute thing about you're back in the States and, you know, you got to let put Nam behind you, and you know, you can't go out, you know, killing people on the streets, and you have to act like a, you know, civilized human being, you know. And it's like, yeah, okay. And you know, you hear the stories about how they had people yell at you or whatever. When I left El Toro and went out to leave, they had a chain link fence up, and there was a whole bunch of protesters out on the other side of this chain link fence, and they threw trash at me and spit at me and called me baby killer, and you know, it was pretty rough, man. I mean, when I walked through that gate, you know, I was feeling like I had done something, you know, the sacrifice for my country, and I'd been in war, and all these guys had died, you know, for our freedom. And I walk out the door and just, I mean, it was like there had to be at least 50 people out there. I remember this lady spitting at me and calling me a baby killer, and she was young. I mean, she was my age. You know, I was a kid, man. I wasn't even 20. I was 20 years old, you know. And I just remember walking up to the fence to her and saying, you know, a lot of men died so you can spit at me and call me a baby killer. I said, you just remember that. You know, turn around, walked off.
I want this country to love me as much as I love it.
I went back to Chrysler Corporation. I had worked there beforehand. Started going to school. Drank a whole hell of a lot. Trying to forget everything. And then I actually was a closet vet for probably 15 years. I never told anybody about Vietnam or anything.
Carl Marlantis talks about being a closet vet, and he talks about coaching soccer with another guy. They were both Marines of Vietnam. They coached soccer together and knew each other for like 9 years. Had never, ever even spoken about Vietnam. And the way it comes up is at dinner one night, their wives are, you know, talking, and one of the wives says it, and the other one looks at her and says, "Well, you know, he was in Vietnam too as a Marine." And that's how they find it. You know, this whole, I mean, a closet vet, right? Only Only Vietnam veterans, right? Only Vietnam veterans use that term.
You know, I drank a little bit too much. At that time, the Vietnam veteran wasn't thought too much of. You know, I had people say, what the hell did you prove? Baby killer, you know, different things like that. A few bar fights, unfortunately. Relationships, I couldn't keep one very long. And unfortunately, I met a good woman that has helped out. We ended up having two beautiful kids. And but I keep thinking back too, you know, Tom, you know, you got to make a good life for yourself, whatever. You know, there's guys back there, those 18, 19 years old, never had the chance.
I have tinnitus. I have nothing but a constant ringing in my ears day in and day out. And there's times that my wife could sit right beside me and I can't even hear a word she's saying.
They never treated the mind. They never said, here's some of the things you're going to go through. Here's some of the thought process you're going to have. That was really a surprise. That's very unfortunate. For all the centuries that mankind's had war, and for as professional as our military is supposed to be, really sad that there wasn't back then some preventive, some proactive teaching, and then some during, and then some follow through.
Turn me into a drunk, or I turned myself into a drunk, I don't know. But it just ate away at me. And it was, you know, friends you lost and just the experiences. I don't know if they call it PTSD or whatever. Lack of sleep. You know, just can't sleep. You can't have a relationship. Relationships don't last. You know, there's a lot of strife in the family. Nobody knows you. Nobody understands you. Nobody wants to hear what's going on with you. You know, it's like your father never talked about the war. I see no reason for you to.
It just kind of avoided you. Yeah. And I still won't talk about it. I don't want to have nothing to do with it. But I just kept on moving, you know. Just like I teach you some boot camp, just keep putting one foot in front of the other. Keep on going. I had my little babies, and I raised them upright and kept going. I had to, you know. Too many guys died getting me home.
I really learned to live because of incoming and counting and everything else, to live by the second. You hear people say they live like that. I mean, I literally live like that.
And you go see a shrink, and they don't have a clue either. They don't know what they're doing with you. You know, they patty cake you. They sugarcoat everything. But nobody's helping you.
Our highest leaders should, if they don't.
This is the company commander of Bravo. Passed away last year. Ken Pipes, Lieutenant Colonel, United States Marine Corps. And this is him talking about.
Should consider. It's how price, high the price is. And the effect that it has. Lifelong effect.
You know, it changes you, and it changes you permanently. And people say, you know, like PTSD, you know, it's post-traumatic stress. You know, it's like, well, I mean, I've had people say, you know, well, that was 30, 40 years ago. Why don't you get over it? You know, I wished I could. I wished I could get over it. You know, but on the other hand, it's like, I don't ever want to forget these guys. I don't want to forget what I've seen, you know, what I was witness to, and I don't want to forget them and their memory.
I know for years and years and years, still even to this day, when I wake up in the morning, before I get my eyes open and I get my first cup of coffee, when my feet hit that ground, when I come out of that bed, I'm in that trench, and they bodies up to my kneecaps every morning. Every morning. And it just doesn't go away. And that's okay. I've come to accept that. But that's okay. You know, I'm not supposed to forget all that stuff.
Made me a cynic about a lot of...
This is the co-producer, and I'm proud to call Ken a friend of mine. He's been, you know, so encouraging to what I do. And if you're listening to this, you know that post-traumatic winning addresses these exact things. You know, I've had Nancy and other people. And in fact, Mike Marletta sent me an email the other day. You know, he called it pre-traumatic winning. Nancy called it pre-traumatic training. And the audio that I play in post-traumatic winning by Parker, who's a sergeant, who said, I didn't want to go to the class. I was pissed when I had to. I tried every excuse to get out of it. And then I walked out of there saying, that's one of the best classes I've ever been to. Didn't have any trauma in his life, as some of these guys didn't when they went. And then 90 days later, you know, Parker's dad committed suicide. And he told me, he said, because of that class, I knew what to do. I knew what was going to happen to me. And I had the tools to deal with it. And I just want to thank you. And so, you know, Ken has been, and Betty have been both just so incredibly supportive of what I do. But this is him. I'm proud to call him my friend. Sitting here with the pen he sent me, made out of wood from one of the coolest possessions I have. The pen is made from wood from Bella Woods, and he had a couple of them, and he sent one to me, and he sent me this wonderful note that I have that said, you know, I sent this to you because, you know, you're worthy of it. Yeah, so here's Ken Rogers talking about his experience, and he just said, you know, I came back cynical. The audio that... let me see if I have it. He talks about I can't find it. Well, yeah, I can. Hold on. I'm not in any hurry. It's my fucking show, right? Let me find it. It's about when I... It's included in post-traumatic winning when I talk about alcohol. So give me 1 second, I'll find it. This is my sister, Peggy.
Yeah, your worst enemy.
That's Peggy.
Medications, anxiety.
That's Ross Pape from East Grand Forks, Minnesota.
Yeah. Hold on. Was
and Ken is the last person.
Pistols. I was just, when you tired of putting up with you.
Hold on.
One of the biggest steps to handling my PTSD.
Here's Ken.
You get to a point, if you do it long enough, you get to a point where you accurately describe what you do. You destroy your life. You destroy the lives of the people who love you. You destroy your friendships because people just get tired of putting up with you. I mean, you know, you're an asshole. When you drink and have PTSD, you're an asshole. I was just an ass. I was sarcastic, cynical, pissed people off, hurt their feelings, and didn't care. It was like...
That's the thing. When I talked to him, he said, yeah, and I didn't care either. I was pissed.
And until, I got married a second time, I was still drinking heavily. But I married a woman who understood that I needed to be able to articulate what had happened to me in Vietnam. And she listened, and I came to the conclusion that she wasn't going to stick around very long if I didn't get my shit together.
What makes you stop drinking?
Now, pay attention to how much he was drinking a day. And he did this for decades.
Ultimately.
Well, you know, I just figured out that I was either going up or down, and it was my choice, and I better do it now because I was about past the point of no return. Because I was like drinking a case of beer a day and then maybe a bottle of wine or half a fifth of whiskey or, you know, I mean, I was consuming large amounts of alcohol.
Ken Rogers right there. So that's what plays. He's a part of every version of every post-traumatic winning I do because, you know, a big part of it, the visual I try to lay out for people is there's a few paths that, you know, that you can take. as somebody who's lived through trauma. And again, it could be combat trauma. Again, it could be trauma like Elizabeth Smart. I was, raped when I was a child. I had a Marine come up to me and talk to me about his wife was raped by her stepfather. And she told her mother, and her mother won't believe her. And so one of the well-worn paths is you come home and you try to stick it in the closet, or it happens and you try to stick it in the closet, you don't go near it. There's another well-worn path that you do that, you isolate yourself, and then you abuse substances, alcohol and drugs. And in the process of, abusing alcohol and drugs, you do what Ken says, which is you alienate people and you're an asshole and you run them out of your life and you wind up living alone. And, as you then, let's assume you have some financial issues, you stop PTing and, you don't like your body anymore. And so you're isolated, and it's just a dark place that you live in by yourself. And so you can see, the right, combination of, isolation, I can't get over it, right? Alcohol or drugs, financial issues, and loneliness, and people take their own lives. And so here's Ken, back to his documentary, talking about when he came home.
Things, a fatalist about a lot of things, made me not understand that, I don't need fancy furniture, I don't need a fancy house, I don't need anything. I can live in a hole in the ground.
Actually, I know this will probably sound different from some. It made me probably more mature, more understanding of where other people come from.
I have something that most people in the rest of the world will never own. I don't care how wealthy they become, or how smart they are, or where they go. But for a little bit of space and time, I was allowed distinct privilege and the high honor of walking across hallowed ground with the bravest Marines that ever wore the uniform.
To be part of Bravo Company, in that time and in that place and under those circumstances.
This is the company commander again.
To be able to say, yes, I was with them. I was one of them. Remained one of the proudest moments of my life.
So I just wanted to play that for you because last night when I watched it, I watched it probably three different times, that last part of the movie. And I don't know that I'd ever focused on it that much, but... that's why wherever I go to speak, one of the first things I do on a regular basis is ask, are there any Vietnam veterans here today? And the reason I ask is so I can thank them, right? The reason we're talking about this stuff, the reason that, that so much of this stuff happens now is because of you. It is because of you. And so, we should all be mindful of it. And we should all go out of our way to thank them who were treated so poorly, and be conscious of it. So anyway, to Ken and Betty Rogers, well done. And like any great work, as you continue to watch it over the years, what you see in it evolves, and it means something different to you. So if you've never watched it, I would recommend it wholeheartedly. That you watch it. So we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll check some news headlines. There's some interesting stuff in the news. And then after that, Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenny will join us. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
For all this and more, DAV thanks you. And we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I wanna walk into a cold, bitter ocean, feel the sting of letting go of all hope and so be in the
Peyton Davis here on a Thursday. The time for us to check the news. You've already heard Charles Payne talking business. So, yeah, you know, you can't even get the news anymore, right? Because the news, the lens of the news, it used to be about the news, right? Where you had heard of, hey, this is unprecedented for the United States to sign an agreement like this. It is unprecedented for China to come to the table like this. Okay. Now, the question is, you know, will China follow through? And that's a legitimate question. But, right, it shouldn't. You shouldn't get, like, the news because you're getting opinion before the news. But it is the way it is now. So, anyway. All right. Headlines in Stars and Stripes. Number one, Air Force F-15E Strike Eagles arrive in Saudi Arabia base amid tensions with Iran. So the United States continues its buildup in the Middle East of small yet lethal units as we marginally increase our force protection and our ability to respond. I learned a new word, but I don't think I'm going to talk about it till later, right? Yes, I'm going to talk about it later. So, it has to do with Afghanistan. The rapidly deployed 82nd Airborne soldiers to replace Marines at the Baghdad embassy and could see a pay boost. Congratulations there, boys. Nothing like a pay boost in harm's way. Troops from A Brigade of the 82nd Airborne rapidly deployed to the Middle East this month amid escalating tensions between the United States and Iran and will soon deploy to Baghdad, U.S. Central Command said on Wednesday. Paratroopers from the immediate response force of the 82nd Airborne's 1st Brigade Combat Team will replace some 100 Marines from the 2nd Battalion, 7th Marines who were sped to from Kuwait to Baghdad as enraged Iraqi-Shiite militiamen attempted to storm the American compound on December 31st. Now, that's interesting phraseology, right? The New York Times called them protesters as enraged Iraqi-Shiite militiamen. This is written by Corey Dickstein, one of the two. He's a Stars and Stripes writer. The spokesman would not say when the soldiers would be sent to Iraq or how many would be in the element, citing security concerns. So anyway, force protection in the Middle East, a big deal. And again, we talked about it ad nauseum. The next headline out of Stars and Stripes is this. Representative Gallagher, U.S. needs more agile forces in the Pacific. Who is Representative Gallagher? He is a Republican from Wisconsin, former United States Marine. The U.S. should absorb lessons from the recent ballistic missile strikes against troops in Iraq and Kenya and put a new emphasis on fielding mobile and dispersed forces, a member of the House Armed Services Committee and former Marine said on Wednesday. The threat from Iran's missile forces is far less than those of China, and the U.S. should take note, said Mike Gallagher, at the 2020 Surface Navy Association Symposium, which is why all the Surface Navy news has been coming out this week, just in case you didn't know that. Quote, a strategy of denial will largely be on the back of the surface fleet and Marines deployed, especially in the Pacific, where China is far more capable as a competitor than Iran, Gallagher said. Let's see if there's any more interesting quotes. So the question is, you know, is that all you can be? Okay. So do you sell out for the Pacific? Does a part of the Marine Corps sell out for the Pacific? So the question is, got it, Mike. All right. How much of the military? Because most of the time you fight the war that you're least prepared for. Or at least that's happened throughout our history. Okay. I would say this, Mike. Number one, don't go to war very often. Okay. And when you go, go. Next headline. Iran warning puts thousands of European troops in the spotlight. It's from the Associated Press. A warning by Iran's president that European forces in the Middle East could be at risk if their nations join the U.S. pressure campaign against the Islamic Republic puts a focus on thousands of foreign troops in the region. Right? Most of the time, those troops, you know, provide security, you know, get combat pay and things like that. And they're not really targeted very often, right? Because, hell, there's Americans there. Why would we target anybody else? And that's the way the game gets played. However, right, Britain, France, and Germany, who have spent months trying to preserve the 2015 nuclear deal after the United States unilaterally abandoned it in 2018, on Tuesday, the EU initiated a dispute resolution mechanism to try to bring Iran back into compliance after Tehran began openly breaching some of the restrictions last summer. Iran says it should not be bound by the agreement since the United States reimposed crippling sanctions. So the EU has told them, right? That should you not become compliant, we will look at reinstituting economic sanctions against you as well. Wow, right? Holy moly. Top five stories from Early Bird today. There is a disincentive to tell the truth about progress in Afghanistan. You know, good and bad, according to a Pentagon official. Now, I want you to listen to this audio. Okay, this is John Sopko, the Special Inspector General on Reconstruction in Afghanistan. Okay, he was testifying before the U.S. House Foreign Affairs Committee yesterday. So here's the audio. Pretty interesting, John is.
There was a disconnect almost from my first trip over there between what aid, state, and DOD were saying what was going on and what I saw and my staff were seeing on the ground. That is one of the reasons why we performed or came about to do the lessons learned reports. The problem is there is a disincentive, really, to tell the truth. There's an incentive, and it's for many reasons. And we can go on. I know my time is up, sir, but there are many reasons we can discuss. We have created an incentive to almost require or for people to lie. There's an odor of mendacity throughout the Afghanistan issue, and I know Congressman Connolly has heard me talk about this years ago, mendacity and hubris.
All right, so I heard mendacity, and I was like, yeah, I don't know what the hell that is, right? So I looked it up. Mendacity, untruthfulness, people publicly castigated for past mendacity. Similar, lying, untruthfulness, dishonesty, deceit, and deceitful. Now, dude, I don't know who you think you're talking to, but mendacity, really? Right? Are you concerned about communicating or elevating your own vocabulary status across the planet? Come on, John, get your shit together. Speak to us in words we understand. All right? Here he goes, continues.
You create from the bottom up an incentive because of short time frames. You're there for 6 months, 9 months, or a year to show success. That gets reported up the chain, and before you know it, the president is talking about a success that doesn't exist. And I think that's a good issue to look at, not whether there was lying, but why. And what does that tell us about the way we do business, whether it's in Afghanistan or maybe here in the United States? The Afghan military, and particularly the Afghan police, has been a hopeless nightmare and a disaster. And part of it is because we rotate units through who aren't trained to do the work, and they're gone in 6 to 9 months. I don't blame the military, but you can't bring in a Black Hawk pilot to train an Afghan policeman on how to do police work. And that's what we were doing. We're still doing.
So there you have it. There's a little snippet of his testimony yesterday. The sunny outlooks reported by senior leaders in Afghanistan over the past two decades created a vicious cycle, a Defense Department inspector general told lawmakers Wednesday. Each successive rotation of troops was expected to produce results. In an exchange with the chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, John Sopko, who you just heard in that exchange, explained his response to allegation in the Washington Post Afghanistan papers. All right. So then the article talks about that. He talks about the bottom-up incentive. One former commander of U.S. forces in Afghanistan is now chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Quote, "This army and this police force have been very, very effective in combat against the insurgents every single day. And I think that's an important story to be told across the board," then Lieutenant General Mark Milley said in a 2013 briefing from Kabul. When asked whether he ever misrepresented the situation on the ground, Milley told reporters at a briefing in December that he has never deceived anyone. "I could not look myself in the mirror," he said. "I couldn't answer myself at 2 or 3 in the morning when my eyes pop open and see the dead rolls in front of my eyes." Yet he's contradicted by John Sopko. The article ends with this. Sopko offered a warning should all sides finally reach an agreement. "In light of the ongoing peace negotiations, Congress should ensure that the administration has an actionable plan for what happens the day after peace is declared," Sopko said. So, again, this problem of, in my opinion, general officers not being able to tell the truth. I don't know. What do you do about that? You know? You won't tell the truth. You want to put a happy face on it? That's what we did in Vietnam. You know, we were supposed to be better than that. Evidently not. Next headline. What was Russia's Putin up to after the death of Iran Soleimani? And so the article outlines, you know, the United States essentially pulling back in Syria, right, and the opportunities created there for Russian influence. And that, you know, that right after Soleimani's death, right, Putin flew to Syria. He met with Erdogan, Princep of Turkey. They then tried to put together something to cool things out in Libya, which did not work. German Chancellor Angela Merkel flew to Moscow on January 11th to discuss the situation between the United States and Iran with Putin. How about that? Did I miss something? Did she fly to the United States to talk to President Trump? No, she doesn't deal with the United States. However, Russia watchers said, yeah, it ain't all that. At first glance, it would seem to be an opportunity for Russia. But Russia watchers from inside Russia say Russia cannot expand its footprint in the Middle East. Simply does not have the forces to do it. So you will not see Russian troops in Iraq anytime soon, beyond maybe the odd advisor should that occasion arise. All right. And then it talks about domestic Russian issues. All right. It says Putin announced on January 15th major reforms to the Russian government that, if adopted, will see some presidential power shifted to the parliament and the formation of a new state advisory council. Mm-hmm. The proposal saw the resignation of Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev and his cabinet of ministers, a move presented as a response to the coming changes rather than a coordinated play. The move suggests Putin is embarking on the Titanic project of succession in Russia, or at the very least, a succession in title. Some see the reengineering of Russia's system of government as a means of Putin holding on to power while maintaining some kind of democratic legal decorum. Either way, domestic affairs will likely be more of a priority in the coming years to the Kremlin. The Russian public, too, has a role to play in this shift. The Kremlin is finding it harder to justify bold foreign policy action as the national economy continues to stagnate and public discontent rises. Quote, there is some sense of skepticism now within the Russian foreign policy community towards rushing to fill every hole vacated by the United States. This is no longer that popular domestically, and people are starting to ask questions about what we're doing abroad. And that's from a Russian foreign affairs person. Next headline. Taliban say they've handed a ceasefire offer to the United States peace envoy. Yeah, how about that? The Taliban have given the United States envoy, right, Zalmay Khalilzad, a document outlining their offer for a temporary ceasefire in Afghanistan that would last between 7 and 10 days. Taliban officials familiar with the negotiations said on Thursday. The offer is seen as an opportunity to open a window to an eventual peace deal for Afghanistan that would allow the United States to bring home its troops and end the 18-year-old war, America's longest conflict. The ceasefire was handed to Khalilzad, our envoy, late on Wednesday in Qatar, where the Taliban maintain a political office. So, anyway, so that going, the next story in Early Bird, U.S. military resumes operations against the Islamic State in Iraq. It's an Associated Press article. So I don't think anybody's, to be honest with you, do you think they actually paused operations against the Islamic State in Iraq? No, we kind of did not hear it as much. All right. And then one more article that has come out of the Surface Warfare Symposium going on in Washington, D.C., and then we'll take a break and then you'll hear Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenney. Headline from Defense News. U.S. Navy's top officer says he'll trade growing the fleet for readiness. Interesting. And surprising. You know, readiness means the ships we have all get to sea. And they can't do that right now because their readiness has been so bad. So, anyway, it's just interesting. Navy's... you know, this whole pivot to the Pacific, the Navy been largely neglected for a lot of years as we focused on ground war in Iraq and Afghanistan. And, you know, we Navy EOD guys working there, right? Navy forward air controllers working there. But the service fleet around the world neglected, you know, to the point, you know, of, you know, the shit show we saw over the course of the last 36 months and all the sailors that have died because of just utter incompetence at sea, lacking the ability to drive ships. Navy shit. So in response to a proposed cut of Arleigh Burke-class destroyers over the next 5 years, Chief of Naval Operations Admiral Mike Gilday said shipbuilding cuts are a trade he's willing to make to maintain readiness. Quote, I'm focusing on closing capability gaps, closing readiness gaps, and increasing lethality, he said during the Navy Association Surface Symposium. And for me, the focus is on sustaining the Navy that we have, which comes at a high price. Some of that price is perhaps a reduction in growth. Not to say that growth stops, but growth perhaps slows as they focus on readiness. I think, you know, look, before we can grow this thing, we got to get it, you know, we got to get it good and healthy, and we have to make it able to go to sea. And it's not, you know, and it's not always able to do that. So again, he, not the first choice, but Admiral Moran not confirmed because of a relationship he had with a public affairs officer who was dismissed from the United States Navy by Admiral Richardson. And so all that fiasco. So we'll take a break. After this, on the backside of this, Tim Lynch and Jeff Kenny join me. So don't touch that dial. More of Allman Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
More than 2 million Americans have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Department of Veterans Affairs reports that approximately 11 to 20% of those warriors may have experienced symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. As we recognize PTSD Awareness Month, Real Warriors Campaign volunteer Meg Mitchum, a former Army combat medic who served in Iraq, encourages fellow warriors to reach out when they need help.
The hardest step was admitting that I needed help coping with PTSD. Once I did, my command and unit fully supported me, and I was able to get the care I needed. Getting support helped me succeed in the military and now in my civilian career.
If you or a loved one is coping with an invisible wound, resources are available and they work. For more information, visit the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net or call 866-966-1020.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today.